The network marketing industry has changed dramatically in the last decade. With the advent of social media, digital marketing, the rise of the influencer, and all the tech platforms that promise something extraordinary, how do you separate the helpful from the hype? Welcome to Beyond the Network Marketing Dream, where authenticity and relationships, simplicity and duplication are at the core of everything we focus on. The fundamentals of building still work. Join us as we go beyond the network marketing dream.
Welcome back, everybody. Super excited. We have a gentleman who needs no introduction, Mr. Ray Higdon. Ray, it was fantastic being with you recently. You had a big event in Orlando. You're an icon, a household name in the network marketing industry. You've built something tremendous and really excited to have you on the show today, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
And so, Ray, there's so many different places we can go, but you're seeing a lot happening in the industry. You've got a bird's eye view like very few people do. I want to talk a little bit about that, but maybe just possibly for those people that don't know the name, don't know the backstory, could you just talk about your evolution in the network marketing industry from getting started those early days and how you evolved into be one of the biggest trainers in the industry today globally?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks. So I had worked my way up in the corporate world to a pretty high paying salary. I just kind of realized that there was never going to be freedom in that arena. So I was looking like, where am I going to go from here? I'd worked my way up and now above me was management and he was totally miserable. His boss was miserable. Her boss was miserable. And I'm like, that's where I'm at. And I'm in my early 30s. And I had some buddies that were in real estate here in the state of Florida. And that was 2004, 2005. And they were killing it. And I'm like, man, if those knuckleheads can do it. I mean, they weren't that bright and they were making a lot of more money than I was. And I was working in this corporate job the whole time. And so I wanted that freedom. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go out on my own. And no one agreed with that decision. Everyone thought I was crazy, losing my benefits and whatever. And so I jump into real estate and it was awesome for several years. And then when the market changed, I didn't know how to operate. I didn't know what to do. I hadn't invested in myself. I hadn't surrounded myself with mentors and coaches. And so here I was, broke. I'd lost everything. Went through foreclosure. I went through a divorce. I went through a lot of depression and didn't know what I was going to do. No one was hiring. My credit shot. And a friend of mine who I've never actually asked him, I don't think he knew how bad off I was, but he invited me to a home meeting, which I had dabbled in network marketing and I just had bad experiences with too controlling of uplines and I didn't want to do it, but I didn't know what else I was going to do.
Right. And at this time, you're 30s or how old are you?
So that was 2009. So let's see, I'm 45 now. So whatever that equates. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to figure this thing out. And so I take one of my two credit cards left that hadn't stopped allowing me to use them. And I swipe that thing and I'm like, I'm going to figure this damn thing out. And so I think probably the biggest thing that I did was I created a psychological trigger. And anytime that I thought about how bad my life was and how it used to be great and I used to make a bunch of money, I had to prospect somebody. And so sometimes that was just going through my phone and just ding, where it landed on the dry cleaner, the restaurant, the realtor. I didn't care. Going to prospect somebody. And eventually I had read a book called Go for No. And so I decided I'm going to go for 20 no's a day. And I hated prospecting. So I also started doing a video a day. And so those two main activities, I got to 10,000 a month, my fifth month, 40,000 a month, my seventh month, 50,000 a month, my 10th month. And went on to become the number one earner of that company, made millions with them, changed my life. I was absolutely amazing. Fast forward a couple of years, I was the number one earner of that company for like 3 years. And then some things happened with ownership and they wanted to make a change and they merged into another company. And I ran with that company for 3 years and I didn't intend on doing it, but I had built a coaching and training company at the same time because in 2009, my wife and I, we were doing it on social media before most people were. Most people, they just thought that didn't duplicate and you just couldn't do this business on social media. And when people saw that work, they wanted to hire me and have me speak at their event or coach their team or whatever. And in 2016, I kind of looked, I'm like, I'm putting half here. I'm not doing 100% either. the way that I would like to. And I made the choice to retire from actively building a team and focus on the coaching and training. And that's what I've been doing ever since. I do a lot of keynote events. We run our own event, like you mentioned. We love what we do, but we help performance-based teams discover and overcome their roadblocks so that they dominate, so that they absolutely crush it. And that's what I'm kind of known for.
That's awesome. And you've had such a massive impact. I'm not sure there's many people that had a bigger impact on more leaders than you have. And from the beginning, when I met you, you talked a lot about the importance of the activity and people measuring that activity and looking at what they're doing. And you mentioned it even as you were talking, is doing the work and that commitment you made, that trigger. Well, let's do a deeper dive on that. Why is it, and what can we do about it to get people to engage more in the work?
First, it's, I mean, for that question, one of the big things that needs to be understood is culture and just understanding what does that mean. So I learned culture from a gentleman named Larry Thompson, and he joined network marketing, the same hotel, the same night as Jim Rohn, and 52, 3, 4 years ago. And he teaches a concept called 80, 15, and 5. 80% of your organization has a desire level, not a result level, a desire level to make $0 to $500 a month. 15%, $2,000 to $3,000 a month. 5% have a desire level of $25,000 or more a month. The problem is, every leader on stage is a 5%er with an extremely high level of desire, which that's not the problem, but they think that their job is to make everyone else a 5%er. And so when you create an environment of you should have bigger goals, you should step it up, buddy, in an industry that was built for the average Joe, right? For the average person to be able to start a business. Like, there's so many people in network marketing that if it wasn't network marketing, they would not be an entrepreneur. They would not have a restaurant. They would not have a franchise. They just wouldn't, because they don't have that level of belief. But they saw for a few hundred bucks, they can join a thing and make some money if they want. And so culture is allowing, that's the key word, allowing people to feel good regardless of their level of desire or level of result. And so I say that because if you are the type of leader that when people come in, it's like, all right, we got to get them a check right away and come on, let's go, let's make it happen. Well, network marketing is the easiest relationship to quit. And you'll have people that can't figure out how to program the microwave, but they'll find that cancel autoship button. They will navigate, they'll send the three facts and the notarized signature and the eyeball scan. Like, they'll jump through 52 hoops to cancel that autoship because they don't want to feel like a disappointment. And they certainly don't want to pay for that. Most people got enough of feeling like a disappointment from their parents. And so they don't want to get it from you. And so allowing people to feel good, regardless of their level of desire, level of result, will keep them around the campfire longer, which, by the way, they're probably ordering products, so you're probably getting compensated off them. And if you, the longer you keep them around the campfire, the more likely they'll catch a spark. And so you want to think less like the hard-charging sales leader and think more like the gym. I go to the gym right across the street. If I go to the gym and I work out for 3 minutes and take a picture by the dumbbells I didn't lift and post it on Instagram, the gym owner doesn't make fun of me. The gym owner says, way to go, buddy.
Right.
Regardless of my level of desire, because he likes my autoship. I mean, membership. I get those confused sometimes. And so it's culture is one of the big ones. And then it's from
80% is the goal to move that 80 to that 15, but the realization they're not probably going to the five if they didn't come in as a five.
It does change. So desire levels do change, right? And a lot of people don't get that distinction. They think that it's always result level. It's not result, it's desire level. So, I mean, there are people right now making $1 million a year that are 80%ers. What does that mean? It's based on attempts at personal production. So there are people that reach their goal, 50,000 a month, 100,000 a month, million a month, whatever, and they're no longer attempting personal production. That's not a 5%er. 5%er is foam at the mouth. I'm going to prospect till I'm blue in the face. I'm going to go get this bag, right? They're going to go make it. And you, so you could have someone not making any money, that, but they're trying their heart out. They're studying. They're showing up to everything. They're prospecting everywhere that they go. And you could classify them as a 5%er because of their massive attempts at personal production and their desire to make more money. And so it's a math thing. You're always going to have a large percentage of your team, regardless of if you walk on water or whatever. You're going to have a massive amount of your team that they just don't have a high level of desire. How can you allow them to feel okay so they stick around a little bit longer and possibly upgrade, possibly catch a spark? And I've seen this over and over. I had people in my team that didn't do anything for like 6 months, 7 months, 8 months. And then all of a sudden, they got laid off. All of a sudden, COVID hit. All of a sudden, something happened. And they needed to step it up, or they just got sick and tired of being sick and tired. And because I allowed them to stick around, they had a place to plug in. Now, if you're hard charging and in their face, got to be working or they're dead to you, then they're just going to leave and you'll never have that opportunity.
I shouldn't say failure, but is that more of a struggle for organizations, companies, enterprises, or top leaders to be aware, accept that fact, to acknowledge it? Because obviously it would change their behavior if they understood what you just described, right? Is that more of a struggle for the leadership or the companies or a little bit of both?
I would say both, but more the leaders than the companies. But I'll give you an example. Here's a very simple example. So we did a leadership book. In the leadership book, page 91 and 92, I tell you the most effective way to run a contest. And I've taught this to 100, 200, six and seven figure earners. And when they run it this way, they produce more volume than they've ever produced in their career. I've had so many leaders tell me this that have been in 5 years, 10 years.
The title of the book is what, Ray? They can get it on Amazon.
It's a funky title, Freakishly Effective Leadership for Network Marketing. Okay. And page 91, 92 details it. So here's what happens. And this is all about psychology, just understanding human nature. So when the company or the leader pushes out a contest and says, first place, whatever, Cadillac, second place, steak knives, third place, you're fired, or whatever, right? When someone puts out a contest and it's only first, second, third, 95% of the team says, why bother? I can't beat Patrick. I can't beat Tony.
It's crazy, right?
Stormy's going to win this thing. I mean, I can't. There's no way. So you'll actually take someone who might have been interested in doing some work. They'll actually not, so they'll do less work because of your contests. And so it's thinking like them. It's like, how do I think like this? And so before, if you want to boost, if you want to drastically increase your results in a contest, have a pre-contest. And the pre-contest qualifies them. They have to get one sale in 7 days. One sale in 7 days, and you'll be entered into the contest next week, right? And you'll be able to participate in the contest. What'll happen is there's a whole lot more people that believe they can get one sale in a week. And so all of a sudden, you'll have a massive spike in volume of people coming out of the woodworks that you thought passed away years ago. And all of a sudden, they get a sale and they're excited about it because they believe they can do that. And then what they do in the contest is you have a couple different levels. Hey, have first, second, third, challenge the rock stars, the five percenters, but then also have, hey, if you get two, you get on this free training. So you'll take someone who wouldn't have done anything, and you'll take thousands of people that wouldn't have done anything, and all of a sudden they get three sales. And so it's thinking more about moving the numbers than just upping the five percenters. Because yeah, it's nice to get a 10% increase in 5% of the people. It's a whole lot nicer to get a little bit of an increase across 10,000 people. Very different result.
And still where the volume of the income and the freedom comes from in the organization is the middle of the pack.
Totally. Absolutely. Right. More people believe they can do that than be that first, second, third person.
Within our platform, when we create contests and leaderboards, there's a thing called leaderboards and there's a thing called recognition boards. And we cap the recognition board at 10 exposures or some activity that everybody can manage. And the number one guy in the company, he's capped. So he can do more activity, obviously, on a different contest, but he's right beside that person that had to fight to get the 10. And also another good book, The Four Disciplines of Execution, outlines that look, how do you move the middle? I love that. And so I've never heard it described that way. And did you learn that from Larry Thompson, or over the years you started formulating that 80-15-5, or it's an incredible concept? Like, it does paint a clearer picture and should change behaviors a little bit of leadership, right? Knowing that there are people that they want to be part of the club for a while.
There are people that they'll attend every conference, but their goal isn't to make money. they just enjoy it. Maybe that's where they feel the best. Maybe the spouse doesn't listen to them. The coworkers don't listen to them, but they have friends over here. And who's to say that's wrong? Who's to say, how dare you smile if you're not at a certain rank? Like, that just doesn't make any sense. But yeah, I learned the 80, 15, and 5 from Larry. And then I kind of been thinking and just meditating and thinking about that concept. And I'm like, okay, if that were true, which I believe it is, then how would I change these things over here? And so it's a really powerful concept that relieves the stress, because one of the reasons that leaders will burn out and sabotage is they put this mom guilt on them that everyone in their team has to make money, which will never happen no matter who you are. If you saddle yourself with all this baggage of, oh my God, there's people not making money in here, you don't even know if that's their goal. But you've saddled yourself with that, you'll actually start to say, am I a good leader? I mean, most people aren't making money, and they could be as happy as can be unless you tell them not to be. Right. And so some leaders are like, man, I'm so sorry you're not making money. And they're like, oh, right. I'm supposed to be sad. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. And so like they were happy as could be until you inform them that they shouldn't be.
And then at what place is it one-on-one when you have that 5% or that person identifies themselves, they're emotionally hungry, they're starving to get to the next level and they're struggling. Is that where more of the accountability comes in, or does that ever come in? How do you manage that?
Yeah. So think about church, right? If you're at church, you're not seated according to how much you put in the collection plate, right? They're not like, oh, you come on up, right? You back there, buddy, right? It's one sermon, right? There's one sermon, and whoever gives, they give. And during that sermon, they may say, hey, by the way, we got night classes. So by the way, we're doing this over here, right? They may tell you all the different options, and their options, they'll use the word if. And so the word if is very powerful. When you don't use the word if, you're assuming too much. And I know, because I made this mistake. So I would come on a team call and be like, if you're not prospecting 10 people a day, what's wrong with you? And my leaders would be like, yeah, baby, that was fire. But then people would quit. I'd be like, where'd Tracy go? Tracy, she was just here. And Tracy won't tell you that she feels like a disappointment. She'll just sneak away and disappear. And so instead, you use the word if, and you say, hey, listen, if you're on here and you just love the team group and building a business right now isn't the deal for you, totally cool. We appreciate you. This next part is for those of you who are serious about building a business. And if that's you, pay attention. And if it's not, don't worry about it. See, that says it's okay. It's okay for you to be here and sit at the table, right, if you're not foam at the mouth, psychopath, goal setter. And so that allows people like, okay, maybe I'll listen in, right? And they may listen in and they may catch a spark, but I'm not addicted to that. And the leader shouldn't be addicted to that.
That's awesome. I can't help but think there was early in my career and I had this breakfast meeting and there were 60 some people and it was personal growth and mindset, and we'd tell success stories. And then I read some accountability book. And I started having them fill out the sheet every morning. And I held them accountable in a positive way, but it was very much like we went around the room and literally we'd had this thing going. It's just like a half hour breakfast meeting for a year and a half. It was smoking. It was so incredible. And within like a month, I had it down to 15. I couldn't figure it. I was so slow that I'm like, I don't understand, because my energy was still good. I was still positive. But the very act of saying, hey, okay, Bill, how many you got this week? Well, it's zero. Yeah, well, I got this innate. And I should have realized it earlier, but it's exactly what you're saying. Yeah. And unfortunately, I realized it, but it did take me a month and a half.
Doing all those things, right? You can do all of those things. I'm not saying not to coach people, not to be tough on them, but let them raise their hand. We always overestimate the longevity of someone's hunger and just don't do that, right? So if you want to run a 7-day challenge, run a 7-day challenge. You want to run a 90-day, there's going to be some, right? There's going to be some that have that tenacity. Most people don't. I mean,
has that even changed a little bit more recently? Like the time spans have become shorter in the last decade?
Don't know. I don't know that I tried to run enough long-term thing a decade ago to fully be able to say that. Yeah. Yeah. But I can just tell you, I mean, like we'll do 14-day challenges and we charge them money for it. They got to pay for it. Day 5, I'm yelling at them. Day 5, I'm like, where are half of y'all? And they paid for it. I think most of us, we overestimate the tenacity, the longevity of someone's desire. And so there's nothing wrong with running 10 7-day challenges, letting people hop in, stay focused for 7 days. If they want to join the next one, like, there's nothing wrong with that. But when you run a 90-day, a lot of times people, they walk away with the, oh, I didn't finish that either. And so it's a constant diminishing of their self-worth and their self-confidence.
Right.
And again, I'm talking about the middle of the pack. I'm talking about the majority. I'm not talking about the animals. I'm an animal. You're an animal, right? You do the work. You're consistent. You're disciplined. I'm not worried about us. We'll handle business. I'm worried about all those other people that could have been successful, that could have been happy in our teams, that could have made an extra $300,000-$500,000 a month. And there's a lot of them. And that would make a massive difference on everyone's checks and volume.
So tell everybody what you're doing on the RankMakers University, RankMakers Accelerator. You've got some tools that are really incredible for that person who maybe is trying to figure it out to move up at the level, or maybe they're already a superstar and they want to plug into some advanced teaching. Talk about RankMakers University and what you're doing there.
Yeah. So we've been running our group since July of 2017. And we started tracking progress back in early 2018. And I know that we've had this discussion of how we've tracked, and basically people had to manually update it. Now, if they rank advanced, they had to prove it, because we actually would send them a gift. So every month we send gifts out. But from the tracking that we've done, we've helped network marketers bring in over 300,000 new customers, 71,000 new reps, and around 14,000 rank advances. And so, like, we give you an action step, we give you a training. And in RankMakers University, we have a very large library, but that's not actually the focus. Yes, there's an incredible library, everything from TikTok, Instagram, everything social media, closing, follow-up, you name it, it's in there, I promise you. But what's cool is when you have a lot of data is our access tool. So we have a survey tool that you fill out and you just honestly use it and tell it where you're struggling, and it'll point you and make it really nice and easy. It'll point you to your best resource.
I've seen that. It's almost, it's like a self-evaluation tool. We take it and you can say, hey, I know myself pretty well. I don't even need a third party to psychoanalyze me. This is where I'm really weak. I could use some help. That's pretty cool.
And so, I mean, that could be leadership, it could be scripts, it could be prospecting or whatever. And then we also, of course, partnered up with you guys, and we have our RankMaker Accelerator, which is our version of Rapid Funnel. And people are loving it. We have a guy you and I were talking about. I mean, he generated just hundreds and hundreds of leads through the survey tool just in like the last week or so. And so you get that. That is included in the RankMakers University membership.
I got to see those numbers, and a lot of people are looking for a side hustle. They're in the gig economy. We live in it. And there was a gig economy side hustle survey that was created. Yeah. And this fella using your platform generated over, posted it one time on social and generated 300 leads. And he probably had his own following, and maybe he was active on social.
He's not a big influencer, right? Nice guy. Okay, I like him. He is not a big influencer.
Okay.
That's important to share.
In 300, so he generated a name, a phone number, an email address, 300 push notifications, which you go, wow, that's a lot of notifications to my phone. But if every one of those were a new lead that filled out a survey to say, this is where I am psychologically around the gig economy, and I'm willing to have you follow up with me, I imagine every time that phone dinged, he was pretty excited.
Oh, for sure. He's over the moon. He's so excited.
I did hear him on the call and he was pretty darn excited. That's cool. So Ray, closing up here, talk to me about this. I'm interviewing a lot of people. We work with a lot of companies and we're seeing almost this battle with social media. And it's interesting to me to observe like the digital influencer that has almost become the network marketing guru. Like people are following. And they can make money. They can make it work, not necessarily duplicate. Some of these people tend to jump from company to company because there is no stability culture in the organization. It tends to be shallow. How do you coach and teach a balance? Like, you've got to use social. You have to use the tools. But at the same time, I think there's a danger in that. You may look at it differently. I'm not sure. But how do you find that balance?
It's interesting because, yes, no one even considers building any kind of business without doing social media nowadays. I remember when the quarantine happened, I had companies reaching out to me that I never heard from. And I remember that first week I did 75 Zooms for all these different companies and countries because they were scrambling trying to learn social media because they had only taught in person, in home, all of that stuff. And which is nothing wrong with that. It's still
I can't get over that number. That's a crazy number.
75. Oh yeah, man. I mean, Singapore, Malaysia, Africa. I mean, I was just all these different time zones. And I just knew I'm like, man, people need this. I'm just going to roll up my sleeves and do it. And so as far as what does influence do to someone, that's going to depend on the person. I know a lot of people that have built influence on social media are great, and they've been with their companies for years and they love it. A lot of it has to do with how does the company treat them. And so, and this, some people may not like this take, but in the past, even 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you could be very strict on that your people, right. They had to do this thing. Don't you write a book? Don't you do this? Don't join
another company.
Yeah, certainly don't know. Now, some of this I understand, right? Like join right. another company. I'm certainly not a big fan of someone trying to build multiple companies at the same time. But it used to be where it was a lot about control. And these influencers, if you start building your following, you're getting crazy offers. And if you think about it like this, if you're a network marketing company, would you allow Brian Tracy to join your team? Yeah, you would. Does Brian Tracy sell other things? Yeah. Yeah, he does. And so it's an interesting paradigm of, okay, so it's okay if they're already selling stuff, but if they come in here and gain influence, they better not sell anything. Kind of tough. It's a tough scenario. And I get it because we want to say, well, I don't want them distracted. Well, they're an entrepreneur. They're a solopreneur. And so it's just tough. So you have to have some kind of balance there. I remember the last company I was a part of, when I came in, I had our coaching and training company, and it was just kind of agreed on that I wasn't going to be a trainer for the company. And so I wasn't. And I'm like, okay, if you all are worried about people finding me through you guys and buying stuff, then okay, I had to be okay with that. Now, would any other company have allowed me to be a trainer? Yeah, they all would have. And that time in my life, I was okay. I didn't want to travel that much, and you know, that was okay. But that kind of way of thinking is kind of tough nowadays. It's kind of tough. Now, that doesn't mean to kiss their butt, because I see some companies go the other way and they create things that are really only for the influencers. And I'd be careful with that way of thinking too, because I wouldn't want to punish anyone whoever's doing the work. Let's not punish them. But I think more flexibility and having the ability to make decent money from retailing your product is important too. And that really wasn't on the radar 10, 20 years ago.
I mean, how do you balance this? So it's such a difficult, right? There's a pattern sometimes with companies that maybe aren't in the know. And that is, okay, Joe comes along, he's great at social media, he takes a retail product, he's got a good rank in the company, he creates a bunch of digital tools, he sells a lot of product, he may even be doing pay-click. The company grabs Joe, they put him on stage, then they find out what Joe is doing, and then they terminate Joe or they put Joe's check on hold. And then they go, well, geez, we could do this directly. And then some companies even go so far as to sell, okay, we're going to start selling the product direct, which is a violation of the trust of the entire organization. So is there a blueprint? Like, is there some, I know there's a lot of nuances in this, but is there generally a, okay, you can do these things, but you can't do these. You got to let, if a person quietly wants to go away and join another company, as long as he doesn't talk to anybody, we're not going to go track him down if he does something different. Where's the gray area? Where is the hard stop? No, that's a tough one to be coming to a close here. But I mean, what do you do with that if you're a company today?
I mean, I can just look at what companies are thriving and what companies are doing well. And I'm just not aware of any companies that are retaining their leaders really well and crushing sales that are really controlling. It just doesn't seem that way. And I could not see everyone's back office, but it just seems like when people are more open. Now, I agree with that statement of if someone joins another company, doesn't cross recruit, doesn't do all that stuff, then leave them alone, right? They may come back. And a lot of times they will, unless you smack them. And if you smack them, you give them a reason to prove you wrong. And now they're on a mission to get everybody. Companies that get mad at a leader or something for leaving and blast their entire database with the person's name is about the worst thing you can do, because then everyone's reaching out to them. Hey, what's going on? What's happening, man? Why'd you leave? And so, I mean, that's just a green light for them to grow their business. And so if you're having a lot of people complain that are buying certain tools from somebody and you want to control it, it's tough, man. It's really tough, because we're just in a world where people are looking for flexibility. They're not so tangled in. Before social media, I mean, it was pretty straightforward, right? But even in that, you would have mortgage brokers, you would have realtors, you would have insurance guys that had their business and might talk to some of the other members, and it wasn't that big of a deal. Now it's influencer deals where they're selling gummies or something like that. And so I just think as a rule, the more controlling you're looking to be in today's environment, I think it's going to bite you. I really do.
Yeah. Well, good advice for leaders and organizations. Any closing thoughts? I always enjoy spending time with you, man. You're having such a big impact. Any closing thoughts for those leaders or enterprises out there building today and the market that we're in and as we move forward?
One of the things, if you look at the companies that I notice that are doing well, the two common things that I see are, one, that they're not so controlling, and two, that there is a way for the average ordinary person to make an actual income retailing the product. And so, like, is there enough profit margin in just selling the product? Because there are more and more people doing that. And I really don't think that was the case 10 years ago, 15 years ago. It's more natural for most people to sell a product. There are way more consumers than there are consumer entrepreneurs. And so as social media, like, some people are in network marketing, they don't even know it's network marketing, right? Because they're just selling a product. They don't even understand the recruiting aspect. And I think that was a very small percentage of people 10, 15 years ago. And so looking at your product, can someone make a decent income by retailing the product? And that should be addressed. If that's a no, like, there's just no way. And there are comp plans out there where you're getting 20 cents for selling a $30 bottle of thing. Like, you ain't going to make money there. And I just think people are looking for that. More people are looking for that flexibility of, hey, if I sell a couple things, am I getting my product for free? If I sell a couple things, I make $100 a month or something like that. And so to me, those are two big factors today. And what's cool is with what you guys do, I mean, it just really helps people track their numbers. It helps them with automation. It helps them with a lot of really good tools. And so more and more people need to use those kind of things if they're serious about building their business.
Yeah, well, we're excited about it. Ray, who's your target audience? Like, who are you working with and focused on helping the most right now? And how do they reach you if they want more information on what Ray Higdon and the team are doing?
Yeah, I appreciate that. So, I mean, obviously, on the network marketing space, we work with, I mean, we just think the last 2 days we got hired for 3 keynotes, right? So I do a lot of keynote speeches at different companies. I personally work with a lot of different leaders. And then we have our Rankmakers University for anyone that is serious about building a business. Now, people don't join our stuff that are looking to make $100 a month. I mean, they're looking to make more than that. And that's why they would spend money and invest in themselves. But just overall, I help performance-based teams on their roadblocks to dominate. And so we get in there and not just teach them the tactics, not just the daily routine, not just the social media strategies, but actually get in there and help them understand, why aren't they reaching that next level? And a lot of times there's some interesting stories that we've helped leaders with of why they're not doing the work. Maybe they saw their parents make a bunch of money and lose it. Maybe they have a bunch of siblings and they learned as a kid that getting recognition caused others to learn. I mean, there's a lot of psychological stuff there that prevents people from reaching their potential. And we get into that deeper kind of stuff, the tactics. I mean, they're not that advanced or complex, but why won't you do the tactics is a really powerful question.
Really figuring out that story they're telling themselves and why are they buying it? Yeah. Well, fantastic. And then rayhigdon.com. Ray, is that the best way for you to reach out and find out more?
Yep. All right. RayHigdon.com works, and we're on all the social medias. We do a lot of free videos, and we just love what we do and love working with you guys.
Yeah, we're excited to work with you too, my friend. It's great to have you on the show, and I know we'll do it again. And awesome. Thanks for everybody for listening.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Network Marketing Dream with Patrick Shaw. For more insights on building a solid networking business, visit our website at rapidfunnel.com/MLM. If you loved our content, please share, like, and subscribe. We look forward to seeing you in the next episode.